We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The baseball season is go, go, go. It's nonstop, relentless for every night, six straight months, and then hopefully another month in October. You also have work, friends, family, and a million other things going on. That's when you reach for a Coors Light. It's made to chill. There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. I mean, the mountains on the bottles and cans even turn blue when your beer is cold. Is there anything better than opening up your refrigerator after a long day, seeing that icy cold Coors Light can or bottle in your fridge? The answer is no, there's nothing better. That's why when it's time to chill, you choose Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So that's why when you want to hit reset, reach for a beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And as always, celebrate.
We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 545. We're recording Monday morning because Sunday was Mother's Day, and it's a hell of a lot different when you're celebrating for your spouse along with your mother or mother-in-law. There's just a lot more to do in the day. You were traveling. I was also busy throughout the day, so we just figured with an off day on Monday, let's record Monday morning after the walk-off weekend in the Bronx.
Yeah, there's a lot. Look, man, we are not priorities any longer. There's no, in your house, you're definitely the third priority. I'm maybe fourth because we have a dog. So it goes.
Oh, Maddie's ahead of you. That's
and
sad.
On Sunday for sure, because of Mother's Day, it's like me way the F in the back. The only priority is that I do nice things and that we were up in Delaware at Bethany Beach. That's where my mother lives now. So. Distant from being important on that given day, and had to make some adjustments here. So I'm glad we could record in the morning and not after a long car ride with
Father's Day. I'm looking forward to Father's Day. Also, is my birthday weekend because I was born on Father's Day, so my birthday is always going to coincide very closely with Father's Day, which means they're just going to lump.
What's the
lump
date
both
of Father's Day this year?
I think my birthday is a Friday and Father's Day is that Sunday. I don't know. So that would be the 21st.
If you know when your birthday is, you should be able to do some simple math and figure out when it is.
But what this also means is no Bob on today's episode. Usually intern Bob is on the Monday shows, but he's got college and it's early.
He's in college. He's sleeping right now. There's no doubt about it.
So we're not gonna have Bob. We'll have Bob back on next week for the regular scheduled programming. But overall, I mean, good homestand for a team that was coming in. I think you and I both agreed this was the most important homestand. I think Michael Kay yesterday said it's their longest homestand of the season. They started with Detroit, the worst team in the American League. They mopped the floor with them, which is exactly what they were supposed to do before the Astros series, which was obviously very important for a number of reasons. Just also basically for, here's a good team. Let's see what we can do against a good team. And they won 2 out of 3. Could have very easily swept that series if some things go differently on that Thursday afternoon. And then Washington, I know they were below 500 entering the series. I think everyone in that division pretty much is like below 500.
Yeah, it's a weird division because there's a lot of talent there, but it's not, they're not performing. It seems like the Yankee early season woes have been happening across the league for to a lot of different teams. So yeah,
I think I saw a stat.
It's not really indicative of what that division is, I think.
I think I saw a stat that I don't know how this works because winning percentage in theory should always be the same because everyone plays each other, but it was something about like winning percentage is the worst it's ever been through the month of April. And I guess that's just because everyone's hovering around 500.
I was going to say, does that mean parity or does that mean just everybody's playing or the good teams are playing down and the bad teams are still playing mediocre anyway?
Yeah, I think it's just mediocrity across the league was what the stat was about. But the Nationals still came in with good pitching. Corbin, for even though he was struggling, is a great pitcher. Scherzer, we saw what he did. He's still one of the best pitchers in the league, just unhittable at times.
Also shows how exposed the Yankees could possibly be against good right-handed pitching. Those are the exact matchups that you know we circle when we see the sporadic offense shape up as this team really does have. Yes, they go through spurts, but we see how dominant right-handed pitching can really shut down this team, and that's worrisome to me. So I'm circling that one.
And they stole that victory on Saturday, and then Sunday they also get the walk-off win. So it caps off a 7-2 homestand before they go on a 10-game road trip leading into this Tampa series. And this is exactly what I was hoping would happen. 7-2 homestand. You are, for the most part, playing good baseball. We'll talk about Friday night's debacle in a second. But you have two walk-off wins, some momentum, an off day, Tampa. You can't get spanked by Tampa yet again. You just can't.
Yeah, it's a big series coming in, for sure. I'm glad they had another, you know, relatively big series, in quotes here, with Houston in this last homestand to kind of get the juices flowing back again, because it doesn't seem like they have been flowing when they played Tampa because they'd be getting their asses kicked. But I'll say one of the offense was not good this weekend, but the positive is that those are games that the Yankees lose in April for sure. Like very much so lose, and probably Friday nights happen more often than Saturdays and Sundays in April because the wheels fall off. But the wheels didn't fall off. They kind of stayed the course. The pitching held up, which it really has been very, very, very good all year long. I mean, we can't really say enough about this pitching, to be honest. The bullpen has been very good. A few little things here and there lately. But, you know, ever since Kluber started pitching well too, you're starting to see this rotation become solidified, which is crazy. And they're really pitching well. So that's kept them in the games. But those games they lose. They lose in April. They found ways to win it, even though they were not pretty. Saturday was ugly. Had a lot of runners on base, had a lot of walks. That they couldn't capitalize on Sunday as well. Scherzer basically shoved bats down their throat when he was pitching. But again, they found a way to win. So that was something that I like to see. It's good for momentum, I think, when you have a team that's like kind of struggling still, but is able to get in that W column.
The starting pitching obviously has been one of the standouts of the season. Just taking Cole aside, because we know what he is, you're starting to see improvements from Taillon and Kluber. Herman also pitched well on Sunday. Schwarber hit a nuke off of him.
What Schwarber could be as a Yankee and Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, except that ball went like the ball went to the 50th row of the second level. So it's not exactly like that was a Yankee Stadium home run. That thing's out of Yosemite.
It's more of like the vision of what Schwarber was going to be potentially. All those trade talks were happening around him.
For sure. But one thing that I noticed is that Taillon was pushed deep into the game on Friday. Then the Yankees wasted a good start from him. And you had Herman on Sunday, who was pushed deep into the game. Even though his pitch count was 80, he threw 80 pitches. That's a very low pitch count, but he was pushed into the seventh inning. I don't know if it's confidence that the coaching staff has in these guys. I don't know if it's an actual, they're making a point to have a different strategy. I don't know.
They
if
must
that's
be
it.
Because it's been different. It's been different. There was a
like what happens in previous years.
Like
no matter
around
what,
rock bottom, man. Around rock bottom, still calling that moment rock bottom is when Judge gets called out at third and Boone starts crying about something that he made a mistake on. I'm calling that rock bottom because that does seem like a turning point. of when the, I'm not saying it was a rally cry, but I'm saying it was a turning point in the standings, a turning point of when this team started clicking and getting into the wins. But you see what's after that, like there's been, the pitching has gone deeper into games. I love it. Even if they get snake bit, even if there's a snake bit here and
that's
there.
That's the rub though.
I don't care. I want these guys conditioned to go later and deeper into the game. And if we have to sacrifice a few of these starts in May, April, even into June, fine. I want that mentality to go out there and fight for seven innings. Fight for seven innings. That's your mentality every single game. And if you're able to keep your pitch count down like Herman, like that's a perfect world. But if these guys are in that mentality to fight for, you know, getting into that seventh inning, like that's a very, very, very positive thing for the New York Yankees.
That is the rub, because with Herman on Sunday, it's you've got a 2-0 lead and then he's facing Schwarber, but he's only at 80 pitches, but he's in the seventh inning. So it's like the devil and the angel on the shoulder. It's like only 80 pitches, seventh inning, third time through the order, Kyle Schwarber. So it's like you got to weigh those things and then ended up not working. And that's the ironic thing here, even though we were happy that they're trying to push the starters deeper, because like you said, these guys need to be conditioned or else when it comes time late in the season to, you got to save the bullpen a little bit, or you need to get a little, an extra out or an extra two outs in the playoffs, because you can't go to Chad Green and Johnny Loaiziga and whoever else time after time,
because they were used a couple. Yeah.
When you face a team, five game series, seven game series, these batters see them every day. Guess what? They're eventually going to get hit. That's what I go back to the Chad Green thing in the Houston 2019 ALCS. He faced the Astros, it was like four times in 7 days. Guess what? They're going to eventually time him up and hit him. That's what happens. Not everyone's Mariano Rivera and they can see the same cutter a billion times and still not hit it. So you have to get length out of your starting pitching if your bullpen, which has been great as well, is going to carry you through October. It's just, I think that's how we've seen it play out for all of these teams that have won the World Series over the past 5, 6, 7 years, whatever. I guess the one exception is what, Kansas City, when they won the championship.
But Kansas City, even still, if you look back at their numbers, they deployed their starting rotation in a way that was effective. And yeah, they had a lethal bullpen. There's no doubt about it. But these, they deployed it in a way that was, first of all, I think it's a bit of an outlier. And also at the same time, kind of pushed the Yankees into looking in this direction and looking into, you know, making the bullpen just nasty. I think it definitely influenced what they were doing with the roster. But they, again, had some good starting pitching in the playoffs as well, if you look back at that series. So, look, I agree. I think that it's not a bad thing at all. It's only good if you have a starter with the mentality to go out there and grind and get into the seventh inning. If that's the goal, that's a great goal to have. And you know what? Look, if Boone is pulling a guy in the seventh inning and they're looking at a bad matchup and the seventh inning, like certainly that's not too early to deploy a guy and come out here and put the kibosh on somebody. So yeah, that change could have happened between Herman and Schwarber. Not a great matchup. But again, if you're going to get snake bit at this point in the season to figure some shit out, I'm okay with that. I really am.
But I do think that deserves some questioning by Boone, because instead of Herman at 80 pitches, what if he was at 94 pitches? Does he get pulled for Schwarber?
Yeah, probably. But I think that's reasonable when you're looking at the way that a guy is. I mean, that's where the numbers and the statistics for me do come into play. When you have the different range of the pitcher and you're seeing how he's been, you know, on previous outings, and you're identifying a fall off at a particular amount of effort, right? Then to me, that's relatively valid, especially if you're that deep into the game and you don't have that many outs to get to close the game out. It's when you're in the fifth inning and you still have half the damn game to get through, and you got to like figure it out with Lucas Licky and like all these other guys that are coming in there that are not your top guys. If you're in the seventh inning, you can deploy whomever you want.
Yes, but you still have to look at matchups, and I just don't think there's that drastic of a difference between 80 or 90 pitches if you're going to talk about the tying run being up when it's the seventh inning. So that's my only point. I'm not crushing Boone for it, just like I'm not going to crush Boone for pulling Garrett Cole on Thursday against Houston. This is something we did not talk about in our Friday Fives. because I honestly didn't even cross my mind as if this was a second guess. People were crushing Boone for bringing in Chad Green in the eighth inning when you're leading after Garrett Cole pitches 97 pitches, gave up a home run, two home runs in the game, and clearly was not as dominant against Houston as he had
been. He was against everybody except for Alvarez.
But still, he had, I think he had, what did he have, five or six strikeouts on the day instead of his usual 14?
Yeah.
So yeah. It's like they were getting better at bats off of him, even though he only gave up two home runs to Alvarez. I didn't bring it up on Friday or on Thursday night because it didn't even cross my mind as something that Boone did wrong. It's like, oh, you're telling me we're going to give Chad Green a lead in the eighth inning? Yeah, I get it. Like, don't crush him for that.
No, I think it's hard to. You could definitely make a very significant argument for having Cole come back out, especially if he's telling you that he feels good. And to me, you have to listen to Cole no matter what. Almost like the guy is.
But he's never going to tell you. He's never going to tell you I want out of
you
the game.
If you know a guy, you can tell by the way he's saying something and what he's actually saying.
Boone's not allowed to go against Garrett Cole.
Exactly. Garrett Cole is the most dominant voice in that dugout. Do you agree with that? The most dominant voice in that dugout.
No, so what I'm saying is Boone doesn't even ask him the question. It's just, we're bringing in Chad Green. If he goes up to Garrett Cole and says, you got one more inning in you, Garrett Cole's going to say, yeah, yes, Skip, I got another inning in me. And then he has to put him back out there, even if that's not what the decision.
I believe him. I believe that man.
This isn't about...
But again, the eighth inning, no problem with it. I really don't. I'm playing the other side, but I have no problem with that at that point. If you have arrested Chad Green coming into the ninth inning, you feel really good about that.
Yeah.
Like, unless you're going back to the fact that he did pitch all those innings in 2019 against the Astros.
It's 2021, Scott.
He did hit this. To be fair, Altuve did hit the same pitch that Gurriel hit out in the playoffs. So
If you want to question Aaron Boone in that inning, it's the fact that Chad Green clearly doesn't have it and he just leaves him out there to face Altuve. So it's like, if you want to question that, maybe bring in a different guy for Jose Altuve. Whatever.
Yes, I think it's fine. Pushing the guys, Herman got snake bit. If you look back at it, probably not the greatest matchup, but at the same time, again, I'm good with the mentality and what he's thinking there, getting this guy through, pushing Herman a little bit more. I think it's a good thing to do right now.
So before we get to Friday night's debacle, did Jay Bruce turn the Yankees around? Because they're 13-6 since his retirement. I got a funny question from Amir Nakir on Twitter. He DM'd me, said, just thought, does Jay Bruce get a World Series ring if the Yankees win at all?
I mean, yeah, he gets a World Series ring.
It's up to the discretion, I think, of the Yankees.
I think they give him
brass.
A World Series ring.
You think so?
I mean, look, you bowed out. You identified what the Yankees couldn't. I'm no good. Guys, I'm an anchor here. I'm no good.
Was he any worse than Mike Ford has been?
I mean, Mike Ford had a big hit the other night, so yeah, I guess so.
Jay Bruce had a couple big bloops. Hits.
Yeah, and Mike Ford's not a freaking problem over at first base either, like Bruce was. Either way, yes, he does. He identified it. I give him credit for identifying that he's dog shit. Anybody who can identify in a moment that they're trash and be like, look, dude, guys, I got to step out. I'm bad. I admire that. I admire that person because it takes a lot. Not very many people can do that.
Self-recognition. It's a very underrated characteristic.
I know you wanted to talk about Albert Pujols at some point in this, but we will.
It's actually good. That's a good parallel there. But yeah. Friday night's loss was one of the uglier losses because, again, Taillon gave them the longest start of his season so far, 6 1/3. He was lights out after the second inning. They get to the eighth inning of a game, tied 3-3, and this is a bullpen game now, and you're at home. You have to win that game. And what happens? Judge boots a ball in right field. DJ LeMahieu throwing error at third base. Gleyber Torres error at shortstop. Lowell Isaac gave up 4 hits and 6 runnings, and it's game over. That's it. Game. Blouses, to quote Dave Chappelle. It's like, what the hell was that absolute meltdown in the eighth inning? That was April baseball, what we saw from the Yankees. Just complete, utter train going off the tracks.
It's my bad, man. It's my bad. I was listening to that game driving to my mother's house on Friday night. And we were getting close around that time. I turned the game off because I had to get in, get the kid in, get the stuff in, make that transition. I got inside, turned on the television. What the hell happened? I was like, how did this game just end up? It was a tie game. I actually went pretty quickly too, I thought. And then, yeah, I look up and the score was bad. So I turned the game off, turned John and Susan off, and apparently that was the ultimate voodoo and bad shit happened. So my bad.
And it, I think it's very appropriate that we talk about this article as in 538 and the title also very good. The Yankees have a fundamental problem. Their fundamentals. This is something we've crushed them on. But just some lowlights from the article. Let me run through these and we can talk about them. The Yankees have a 41% success rate advancing runners from second base with zero outs and scoring a runner from third base with less than two outs. That's the third lowest in Major League Baseball. The Yankees have the worst rate of productive outs, which is advancing and scoring runners. Only 18% of their outs are productive. They've been held scoreless in 75% of innings this season, ninth highest rate in Major League Baseball. Seventh highest rate in grounding into double plays, 12%. The Yankees rank last in base running WAR. This is according to Fangraphs. They rank last in the league for taking the extra base, only 33% when the opportunity presents itself. They have the worst per base runner rate, 4.6% of making outs while running the bases. Only three starters rank above average in base running, Gleyber Torres, Aaron Hicks, and somehow Gary Sanchez. I don't know how that's possible, but he just doesn't get on base, so I guess that's why he ranks above average. He doesn't have any opportunities. And then defensive WAR, the Yankees rank fifth worst in the league, and so far their three regular outfielders, Judge, Hicks, and Clint, are all below league average in defensive WAR. This all goes to the fundamentals, in your words, being dog shit. It is hard to win baseball games when you're bad at all of these very core, basic things. You don't have to be the best in the league. Don't be the worst.
Yeah, it's one of these areas in baseball that if you're a casual fan, you're looking at it and maybe you're not noticing it as much because you're seeing the ball fly out, you're seeing the highlights, you're not seeing all these little things that are so core to the game of winning and losing the game of baseball. They're the intricacies that matter so very much that get overlooked, I think, by a lot of casual fans today. And unfortunately, the way that a lot of teams and managers approach the game of baseball, it's more production. Doesn't work. You know, the walk doesn't matter. The error doesn't matter. There's a mindset that the error doesn't matter in defensive statistics. When, like, I hate the fact that people say that, and then I feel like it's grabbed on. Like, okay, it doesn't matter. Don't worry about it. As long as I can get,
as long as I can get to
the ball 5 feet, you know, 3 feet further to my right more often, and that shows up in the stats. That's more important than the boot that I had on a routine ball. Like, bullshit. There's a mindset. There's a number of things that you should do no matter what. Probably, like, you know, 95% of the time, 98% of the time. And I think some of that in today's mentality gets lost a little bit. And I think that's unfortunate. And it's not great for the root of the game. That being said, a lot of these fundamental issues that we're seeing right now have happened in April. And the April Yankees were bad. They're a bad team. Very bad team. Overall, bad. Everything bad. Manager, bad. Players, no good. Bullpen was good, but the rest of the team was terrible. So can we get a new clock on what these fundamentals are starting?
Do you see any of these things? But my problem is all of these things, we know the players that the Yankees have on the roster are bad at these things.
It's correct. You're right. So I'm trying to get to a point here where I'm helping Boone out and what he's saying to these guys. But I'm really, at the end of the day, for me, until I see him out there with a fungo hitting ground balls, I'm not going to believe it. I mean, Girardi literally would go out there and hit fungos to these guys. Girardi has his faults, and I've seen them recently in the past couple of weeks, and I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot about those. Oh yeah, I forgot about that. Oh yeah, I forgot about that. There were some moments after I've been talking about missing Girardi that I've, oh yeah, I remember, like, you know, some of these things that would drive me insane. Didi, not so much, but Girardi, yes. I think that as the season goes on, they will get better at these fundamentals because of just reps and the way that the season goes. But yes, you get exploited in the beginning of the year. And what that shows me is that it was not an emphasis at all of any kind of preparation. That's a worry to me.
But the almost a bigger issue than not having the emphasis is the players are not equipped to do a lot of these little things well. They're never going to be a team that's excellent base running and taking the extra bases. Because they don't have the players to do it.
Absolutely, they're equipped to do that, though. They are equipped to do that.
They're not, though.
When you say they're not equipped to do that, that means that they don't have the abilities or they don't have it in them to do these things. And they do. They absolutely do.
No, I don't believe that they do. they have the ability to hit a lot of dingers. That's what they have the ability to do. They walk
Andrew,
and hit
dingers
and strike
out. These guys have the ability to be very good professional baseball players. They are choosing to double down on particular things. Launch angle, strikeouts, they come with the approach. A lot of this is approach. It has nothing to do with their God-given ability and the way that they are, the way that they can play the game of baseball, because they're so good at baseball that if they made it an emphasis, they could absolutely make it, you know, improve on these fundamentals.
They could
and become better at these things because they're sure. that good at baseball. I think
they
people
improve.
Forget that they're professional athletes and baseball is extremely difficult. But when they are focused on one thing, it's all about the reps. If they're getting the reps at the with a swing that has more of a launch angle and the approach of you know their mentality right now, then they're going to be deficient in other ways. And I understand that you can only do so many things. So if you're hitting line drives and ground balls, you're not going to hit the ball out of the park either. So which is better? That's where I think the nerds come in and say launch angle is better. The approach that they have is better. Let's just wait this out. Wait this out. Wait this out.
But we've seen four seasons now where this team is not good at advancing runners, making productive outs, and scoring guys in from third base with a productive out. I don't expect it all of a sudden to just get better. This team, this core of guys, is not good at doing those things. You agree?
I think it's because of their approach. But yes, but I think it's because of their approach.
Maybe they could improve
and
if
some,
they changed
some
their
of these
approach.
Guys, because I think Gio, LeMahieu, no problem. Judge even, no problem. Stanton, you know, has changed, but Stanton just, you know, he's either hot or cold. There's no in between.
Boy, did I nail that or did I nail that? Or last episode, I was like, just enjoy it while it lasts because it's not going to last. And then he goes almost hitless on the weekend. He gets the walk-off single, but that was his only hit of the weekend.
But if you look at but his numbers, I think what he went 1-for-11 at the end with 3 walks also.
He walked
so
a little
he
bit.
He was on
yeah.
base.
It's just he was playing a video game for the previous week where yes. a pitcher threw him a strike and he hit it out of the park or he hit a double off the wall. It was just
this
it
is
was
why,
too
this
easy
This is why Gary
him.
Sanchez got ruined in all of our heads is because of the first month he had in the big leagues.
Boy, Gary Sanchez at bat on Saturday, on Sunday in the eighth inning was absolutely pathetic. And Paul O'Neill, in a very Paul O'Neill way, basically called him out for not being able to hit the ball because he was like, you only get so many meatball pitches and miss them before you're eventually not going to get that meatball pitch anymore. And Sanchez got 4 very, very hittable pitches, and he fouled them back every single time. I don't know if that's just slight mechanical, not quite on the pitch, a little bit late, whatever it is. He was just missing. He was taking good hacks at it, and O'Neill, but where's the ball? Oh, it's fouled off the screen. It's not in the gap. It's not over the fence where a 92-mile-an-hour fastball center dick should be. And then what does he do? He strikes out on a pitch out of the strike zone. It was a real sad at-bat. Real, real sad.
This is what we saw last year with him occasionally hitting a batting practice ball out there, but out of the park, but so many times missing opportunities square over the plate where he's just either fouling it back or not seeing the ball to where, you know, he should be as a beach ball coming at him and being able to destroy it. I don't know, man. I don't know what he, I don't know.
What do they do? What do they do at this point? I mean, Higgy hit a home run off Max Scherzer.
And
Higgy's catching Garrett Cole every time out now. It looks like he's catching Corey Kluber every time out now. Yeah. And he's going to catch one of the other three guys. Gary Sanchez is now 2 out of 5 days catching. So what do you...
You just keep going. You do the what you do. You keep going. This is what it is. It's a 50-50 platoon ish. It's happening.
Except
he's not able
it's
to 60-40.
Hit 60-40.
Well, it could be 70-30. Could be
yeah. 50-40. I don't know. It's just I think you and I like to give Gary chances. We want Gary Sanchez to be good
I don't,
again.
I am not on the fence of giving him chances necessarily. I'm just at this point it is what it is, and yes, there's opportunity for him to be better because we've seen it, but it's been a really long time since we've seen it, and it's just not showing up anymore. It really isn't. It's just not showing up. I said I'm going to give him until close to the All-Star break through June. Still gonna do that, see where we are, because I do believe Higgy's going to most likely fall off at some point, and probably not as defensive though. The defensive abilities of Higgy's going to be there. The way that he catches a game is going to be there. That's not moving anywhere. That's not going anywhere. The home runs are probably going to go out somewhere. But he's starting to hit. He's starting to do other things besides home runs too, man.
Are the home runs going to go away? Because if there's one thing Higgy's been able to do in his career, it's hit home runs. I think like 30% of his hits coming into the season career were home runs. So he's got pop. He just didn't do anything else.
Look, if Higgy's is showing production as much as Gary Sanchez is or would be, then you got a serious problem. Because right now, clearly, there's no question about who these guys like throwing to better. No question.
I don't know what it was about that eighth inning at bat for Sanchez, but it was kind of a breaking point for me. Because I'm just watching this. I'm like, these are meatballs, and he's not hitting them. Like, what is going on? Does he have something in his eye? Like, can he not see? Like, what is happening here? How could you not hit this pitch? So, yeah, it was a real just head scratcher for me. I was watching and good for Paul O'Neill for calling him out, because he deserved to be called out in that situation.
O'Neill's good in that way. He definitely calls it a lot of times. He does it in his own way. But
he's player friendly most of the time.
He's player friendly, but at the same time, he also makes sure that accountability is present at certain times as well. He's done it, but Cone does it too. They can't help it. They're players. They have to be able to identify these things and be like, look, that's unacceptable. I've been there. I've done that. Those balls should be out of the ballpark or at least scorched somewhere on the field. And they're not. He's not seeing the ball. He knows what that looks like. Same with Cone from the mound. That's why I appreciate those guys so much. They're so good at the game. And like the Yes Network is by far and away the best the group of baseball and analysts that I've seen out there cover games. Because one, there's a million of them. And two, the players.
Well, no, they've narrowed it down to Cone and O'Neill, though.
For the most part, yes. But the players that are there are tell it like it is, and they speak to their experience well, and they know how to speak about the other parts of the game. They're very well rounded.
I can't lie. I'm not a fan of when John Flaherty gets like the West Coast swing, and it's just John Flaherty at midnight. It's like, oh boy, I don't know if John Flaherty get me through.
He's not what you want, but
John Flaherty always gets like the Oakland road trip, and then like a couple trips to Tampa Seattle in the middle of the summer when Michael Kay doesn't want to make the trek. But so they are going on a road trip starting with Tampa. It's been ugly, as we've said. Last 21 games versus Tampa since the start of 2020, they are 5-16. That includes the playoffs. They have a minus 26 run differential in those games. They have been outscored 78-104. And to be honest, I was surprised it was even that close. But the closer the games are, it seems like the more Tampa thrives against the Yankees.
Yeah, it's true. I think that we're seeing Tampa, they have not been playing great against other opponents.
They're below the Yankees in the standings.
But they're exactly. That's the thing. So the Yankees need to identify that and take care of some business when they go there and identify that they are not this juggernaut that for whatever reason shows up against them or kryptonite, whatever you want to look at it. They need to get off the schneid and do some voodoo.
Is the word schneid used in anything other than baseball?
To get off of? Yeah. Do you get off of anything else besides a schneid? I don't even know what the hell it is, to be honest.
Gary needs to get off the toilet is what he needs to do.
Yeah. So they need to play well. And do you still have anything to say about the grass going to Tampa now that we're going to be back?
Yeah, don't let it affect your fielding. We just talked about how the Yankees are so terrible fundamentally. That Tampa, that the sheen on the fake grass in Tampa cannot help these guys.
Yeah. We'll see what happens. But I'm looking forward to it because again, this is
a benchmark.
Feels like
this
a different team right now.
This is a benchmark series, right? Like, even though Tampa's a percentage point behind you in the standings, they've owned your ass for a season plus. So you got to go into Tampa and you got to win 2 out of 3. I'm not expecting a sweep. I wouldn't ask for a sweep, but you can't just go in there and just get your butt kicked again. It's like, come on. Eventually you have to turn it around against Tampa.
This team's not getting their butt kicked anymore. I think that you look at Friday night. Friday night was a bad inning. Throw it out. Move on. They won two games where one of those games they got struck out by Max Scherzer 14 times, set a freaking record for an opponent coming into Yankee Stadium, but they still found a way to win the game, even though it was very, very ugly. And then Sunday, again, found a way to win the game. That's a different mentality. That's a different approach. You think differently when you're in situations like that. And for baseball, like having that feeling that you're going to win, even if things don't go right, I think is important. So,
well, and also, they're supposed to be getting Luke Voigt back this week,
yep,
which is going to be huge.
Andujar just got sent down, so it looks like that was the there's well, a corresponding
that means a couple up. Couple of things, I think, because Andujar got called up. He played first base on Friday. He got called up because Gio wasn't playing because they were resting Gio's knee. So this is good news on two fronts. I think it means Gio's knee is healthy and Voigt is going to be activated.
Yeah,
and I would
very
expect
positive things.
I would expect a pitcher to get called up and then Ford to be sent down because you're not going to carry Voigt and Ford.
Correct. I agree with that. I think that is spot on analysis.
Unless just for this series, they want to do that just so they can baby Voigt as much as possible, where maybe Voigt gets a DH day, maybe Voigt plays first base and then is taken out in the seventh inning and they put Ford in there, or I don't know what's going to happen. Maybe I could see it for three games. They keep Ford on the roster, but long-term, you're obviously not going to carry Voigt and Ford.
I don't think they're going to do it at all.
For one
I think
game.
They should yeah. just, yeah, let's just get another pitcher in there to play against Tampa, for sure. There's no reason to have Mike Ford on this team right now.
Now, when do we start looking at the standings? Because the Red Sox are continuing to play good baseball. And I just saw an MLB power rankings this morning. Red Sox are number one.
Nope. Oh my God.
I think I saw on our Facebook group, I forget who posted this, but it was kind of like we kept saying this in 2018 with the Red Sox. Well, this can't last. They can't.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Keep playing this level of baseball. Now the Red Sox are not nearly as good now as they were then, but are it was this hot start not a fluke and they actually will compete in the division all year? Because that was not originally planned when we were mapping out the division. It was, well, the Rays are obviously going to be there, Toronto's going to take a step forward, and then it's Baltimore and Boston you can hopefully beat up on. We didn't expect the Red Sox to be this good.
No, we did not expect the Red Sox to be this good. We understood that their offense was going to be a productive offense, but it's the pitching that's doing way better than expected. So, no, I still think they're going to fall back to a middle of the pack in the AL East. I still think that when healthy, Toronto's a better team. The Yankees are certainly a better team, and I think Tampa's a better team. So I think that eventually they will be falling back, and we will see that. But their bats are good. Their bats will not be bad. Their pitching is not good, and that will show itself at some point.
This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. Is there something interfering with your happiness or is preventing you from achieving your goals? We've all gone through a lot over the past year plus with COVID. Well, BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. You can start communicating in under 48 hours. It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It's professional counseling done securely online. There's a broad range of expertise available, which may not be locally available in your area, and it's available worldwide. You can log into your account anytime and send a message to your counselor. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions, so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room as with traditional therapy. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change counselors if needed. It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available. BetterHelp wants you to start living happier today. You can visit their website and read their testimonials that are posted daily to see for yourself. Visit BetterHelp.com/Bronx21. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P, and join the over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of experienced professionals. We have a great special offer for our listeners. You can get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/bronx21. One more time, betterhelp.com/bronx21.
You mentioned Pujols, who got released by the Angels in the last year of his contract. This, I think, is applicable for many reasons to talk about. So it really is yet another example of why you don't sign a guy into their late 30s, early 40s. The Yankees went through this with A-Rod. They had to release him in the last year of his contract. The Tigers are probably going to go through this with Miguel Cabrera. And now the Angels went through this with Pujols. Pujols, we all know, Hall of Famer. He was arguably the best offensive player of the 2000s. I mean, Barry Bonds, obviously, but Pujols was right there. I mean, his age 21 to 29 season, Pujols hit .334 with a .427 on base percentage and had a .172 OPS plus. He was a freak, absolute freak. And he was still representative, actually very good, ages 30 through 35. .279 batting average, .349 on base, .138 OPS plus. Great. A lot of that came in his age 30, 31, 32 seasons, but still for that 5-year chunk, okay. Ugh. Age 36 and over, .247 batting average, .298 on base percentage, sub 300 on base percentage. It's just, you can't have that out of a player you're paying $30 million to be an offensive slugger first baseman. It's, you can't get on base less than 30% of the time. 92 OPS plus. Completely fell off the map. He got slower than slow, heavy, bad. His bat speed was lost. It was just super ugly. And the Angels got a total of 12.8 WAR out of Pujols for $240 million, which is terrible. One of the worst contracts, if not the worst contract in baseball history. They signed him at age 32. Okay? That's how old Judge is going to be when the Yankees will have to sign Judge if they want to. Now, I don't think they're going to give him 10 years because I think 10-year contracts for 30-year-old players are done. But if you have to give him 7-8 years, you're still looking at some ugly years, most likely, out of Aaron Judge. And I think it's something to look at. Like, you look at Pujols, you could have never imagined this is how it's going to end for Albert Pujols when he signs that contract. But he found himself in a situation where he didn't have any regular playing time anymore. Yes, because of his performance, but because they had a DH and a first baseman, and he didn't want to ride the bench. So they released him.
The interesting thing when you look at the contract, and, you know, first of all, it was not abnormal for a type of contract like that. Baseball was paying for people and players and what they have done, right? This has been going on for a while. And I think when they tried to make this move, when Anaheim tried to make this move, they were trying to get over the hump. And actually, I think what they were taking a gamble that they could capture the upside on the front end of this contract, win a championship, finally win a championship, get over the schneid, and then live with whatever happens after that. And they couldn't do it. They couldn't do that. They couldn't capture this. It was too risky. And I think that what GMs are noticing is that when you make big, big moves like this early, when your roster's at a point where you think it can win, this puts you over the top. It's extremely risky because you have to overpay for these guys to get them for the first 2 to 3 years because that's where the production is going to be. And that's a big problem. And I think that's where the mentality is going out. It's not necessarily the long-term contract, but it's more so about the construction of the roster that parallels with that contract and where that guy will be after the first 5 years. That's, to me, the biggest thing. And that's what we're seeing. It got exposed and they didn't take advantage of it. They still haven't had pitching. And after year five, it's, you know, they're not able to recreate what they had when Albert Pujols was signed.
I mean, the Yankees are no stranger to this. Like I said, they did it with A-Rod. They're probably going to have to do it with Gerrit Cole in the last 3-4 years of that contract. He's not going to be a $36 million pitcher when he's 37 years old. Like no one's tricking themselves into thinking that, right?
No, that's correct.
And
at the same time, the Yankees are also a different team where they can replenish a little easier than the
Angels.
The
Angels notoriously spent money, but they've spent it really, really stupidly.
That's true.
But think about Pujols. He was Mr. Cardinal. Like, and the Cardinals walked away from him. Couldn't have fathomed the Cardinals walking away from someone like Albert Pujols, but they looked at it and said, "You're on the decline, not the incline, and we're not giving you 10 years. I know you're our cornerstone to our franchise and we've won championships with you, but from a business sense, we have to move on. And the Cardinals did the right thing. Will the Yankees do that with Aaron Judge? I don't know what the right thing will be when he's 32 years old. That's the thing. If he's if he would sign a six-year contract, then by all means, sign him. But if you're talking 7, 8, 9 years, we know too much about these contracts to know it's not going to end well.
When you look back, again, going back to the Angels contract, I'm looking up some stuff on the fly as we're going here too. The 2012 Angels.
They made the playoffs.
Yes, they did. But they also traded for Greinke that year at the deadline. So they were going for it early.
Was that Trout's rookie year?
I think it was his second year. He may have had a partial year the year before that, but at least his second year. He was 20 years old though, and I think that was his first full year.
Yeah.
But I mean, you're rolling out a team: Pujols, Halby Kendrick, Eric Ibar, who was a decent player.
Hamilton Vernon was Wells, Josh Hamilton on
Trout, Torrey Hunter. And then you look at a pitching staff of CJ Wilson, Jared Weaver at age 29, Irvin Santana, Dan Herron, and then you add Greinke.
That's a good team.
Yeah. This team was making a move and going for it. And I think that the trade for Greinke that year just completely doubles down on what they were doing, their approach. They were going for it in those first couple of years, and they understood they had to win then. You don't make a trade for Zach Greinke at that point unless you think you're going to win the World Series. And they just couldn't do it. And I think if we're looking at Albert Pujols right now on that contract, if they win in 2012 or 2013, I think we're looking at this very differently. Similar to how we look at, and I know there was a rebound
don't say it.
Sabathia won in his first year.
But Sabathia was...
He reinvented himself.
He came back. Okay, Sabathia was a useful piece of the rotation in his last four seasons. Not really the last year, but 2017, 18, 19, he was usable.
There were some moments there that we didn't think that was going to happen, though. There were some moments there that we didn't think that was going to happen.
But we know what happened with Pujols, and the last 4 years, he has been unplayable. That's how bad he's been.
Yes. He's fallen off a cliff. There's no doubt about it. And he's just talk about load management.
I think of load
management in a different way. I think of Pujols. But that's what the philosophy a lot of these GMs were at that moment is you have a roster construction that's ready to win right now. Let's overpay for a guy in dollars and years and try to capture this momentum in a 2 to 3 year window to win a World Series because that's the ultimate and it will be worth it. And it didn't work.
Yeah, and it was we've seen the 10-year contracts for younger guys in their 20s, like Bryce Harper, Manny Machado. But the 32-year-olds getting 10-year contracts that's never going to happen again. I can't imagine.
I mean, it's happening in pitching still, so I'm never going to say never. I think it's still going to happen. I think GMs will still overpay to try to capture it because if it works, then they're good. If it doesn't work, then we look now and see this contract is dog shit. And it didn't work. But if it does work in the first 2 to 3 years, then it's a different story.
All right, let's get to mailbags before we wrap this up. Bob's not here to read them, so I'll do the first one. You can do the second one. First one's from Johnny Gasolone. I think that's how you say it. Hey guys, Gasolone. Here's a question.
I mean, that's a really weighing Italian on the side of positivity in how you pronounce that name. So I like it. I hope it's
how would you say it?
Pronounced that way. I'm going with that. Gasolone. Let's go.
Gasolone. Hey guys,
no break. Gasolone, no break.
Here's a question we could speculate on till the end of July. Who do you think the Yankees would have to give in a trade for Max Scherzer? Do you think the Yankees would go above the luxury tax if they acquire him? Since he's a free agent at the end of the season, it seems realistic to think the Nationals could move him if they fall out of contention. So obviously everyone loved what they saw out of Scherzer over the weekend. I don't know if the Nationals fall out of contention. Could they trade him away, or are they going to just keep him and try and re-sign him because they figure, we still have pitching going forward. We don't want to give up Max. I don't know. I came up with a trade that I think would make sense for both sides, and I plugged it into the nerdy trade simulator, and it matched out value-wise, and it was Max Scherzer for Domingo Herman.
Straight up, that's it?
Well,
I tried to throw Domingo Herman into a trade or in the offseason, and you laughed at me when it was for, I'm trying to remember who the hell it was for. It was to, I don't know what it was, but it was, you laughed at me because it was Herman and there was no upside there.
I forget.
Do we look at him differently now?
I think
as a baseball player,
you have to look at him differently now because he's pitching better. Also, the play you were trading for Lance Lynn. Lance Lynn had one more season of team control. Max Scherzer doesn't. Do you realize how much of a yes? It does matter. What are you kidding?
I mean, it does. I know it matters. I'm not saying that it doesn't matter in the value of the trade. I don't think that a Domingo Herman for Max Scherzer trade.
You don't think a Dingo
gets done? There's no way. Look, I mean, you can look at precedent for the Cubs. Even
it would take more.
The Yankees.
It would take a hell of a lot more. Not a hell of a lot more because you're trading a guy at the deadline who's going to be a free agent. Those players don't have value.
I understand that, but there's also a market value. That's where you're missing. There's a market value.
Yeah. So, I mean, but like, look what Justin Verlander got traded for. Basically just salary dump to the Houston Astros. Okay.
And that's not something that the Yankees are going to do. They're not going to take the salary.
Well, they would be more.
They're going to have to give up their ass so that the salary is staying in Washington. That's part of the reason why it's not going to happen also.
Morons if they didn't take salary just to add Max Scherzer and you could have Garrett Cole and Max Scherzer in the playoffs.
Just think about because they will get nabbed on the luxury tax there and also probably paying the back half of Scherzer's contract for the year. That's a large, large sum of money for half of season to risk and go after that. They're not going to do it. I mean, look, it makes all the sense in the world on the baseball field. They're not going to do it. They've proved that they're not going to do that. That's not what they're doing.
Well, screw them.
Does Max Scherzer help their timely hitting? Because that's been the problem. It hasn't been pitching.
No, but we like what the starting pitching has been so far. But
sure,
come on.
Exactly. So
come on. You wouldn't feel a hell of a lot better going in with Garrett Cole and Max Scherzer into
playoffs? That's not even a question mark. That's not the point here. The fact is that it's against everything that they're doing philosophy-wise. And unless Washington is taking that money, and if they are, the Yankees would have to give their ass in prospects to compete.
I don't think it's going to give their ass. Those trades have not happened since the Gleyber Torres trade, okay? That's the last and possibly only time it's ever going to happen where you trade an expiring contract guy who's a superstar for a boatload of prospects. It didn't happen with Manny Machado. It didn't happen with Mookie Betts. It does not happen anymore.
This is a pitcher. It's different.
Well, we haven't had a starting pitcher get traded at the deadline in a while. I mean, John Lester got traded.
Chapman's not even a starting pitcher, and we saw the ultimate.
That was an outlier. Those were outliers. Also, the Cubs were trying to win a World Series for the first time in 1,000 years.
Yankees haven't won one in 10. It's kind of comparable. 10 plus.
All right. You want to read
what's the difference? Next one's from Jason Alexander. Again, not the Seinfeld guy, I'm pretty sure. But
maybe. We don't know.
Hey, guys. Don't know for sure. Since it's already almost mid-May and Frazier and Gardner are showing no signs of improving, what do we do in left field? With Florial finally showing real signs of improvement in AA, I feel like it might be time soon to give him a shot. Forget pitching. The Yankees might need to look at trading for an outfielder at the deadline. Insert the Talkman joke here. But I think they need to see what Florial brings to the table. What do you guys think? Stay with Frazier. Try Andujar, who I wouldn't trust in left field if my life depended on it. And Florial's off to a hot start in AA Somerset Patriots, which sounds weird.
Yeah, I mean, I remembered but also forgot. Florial did make his major league debut last year. He got into a game against the Mets.
Yes.
And they obviously wanted him. He's still young, and he lost some prospect status over the past two seasons. So I think they want to get him a full season in the minors. I think if more injuries happen, they might bring him up because he's on the 40-man roster and is an option there. But I would not expect Florial to get a real shot this year, maybe next year at the earliest. So I think you got to keep riding it with Frazier and Gardner and hope one of them gets hot for a couple weeks.
Okay, I'll disagree here because I think that if they see enough of Florial, I think he's going to move up to AAA very quickly, and I think they're going to identify what he is sooner than later. I think they've been waiting a very long time on him. If he's showing signs of being healthy, which has been a big problem for him, some plate discipline, which has been an area that he needs to strengthen. I remember talking to Bed Badler specifically about Florial. Plate discipline is a big deal for him. If he's improving on that side of things, I would not be surprised if they were to give him some type of a shot. It would need to be in more of an everyday thing. So the left field black hole that has been this season so far of Frazier and whomever else, would need to stay that way, I think, for them to give them a shot. Otherwise, I think as a Band-Aid, I would not be surprised. And in fact, I would be shocked if Andujar's not going back to Scranton and playing a hell of a lot of left field, because if he can get out there and play some semblance of the field and prove that he can, you know, be a bat, I think that actually does help the Yankees big time. So would not be surprised there at all. And I think liability in the left field is not the worst thing in the world.
Considering the left field production has been nothing, I could agree with giving Andujar another shot to prove if he can do it or not one last time. I don't think he can.
Frazier needs to hurry up.
He's had chances because Gardner has really done nothing. So they have given Frazier a lot of chances, and he's not taking advantage of it, unfortunately. Okay, thank you for the mailbag questions, George and Johnny Gass. I'm just going with those names. Scott, let's wrap it up here. Stay tuned for voicemails, everybody. I think these are going to be some fire ones because we got the Astros stuff and we got the walk-off over the weekend. All right, we'll talk to you guys later in the week.
Believe it or not, George isn't at home. Please leave a message at the beep.
I must be out or I pick up the phone.
Where could I be? Believe it or not, I'm not home.
Let's go, Yankees. Kick those Astros asses. I just heard your podcast, so we'll fire it up.
What a great win by my Yanks tonight, man. Beating the trash trolls. Man, that boy Chapman's unhittable right now. And Stan swinging like he's got Mounier in his hands, man. I love it. Let's go, Yanks. Keep it going. Go for the sweep tomorrow. All right, boys. Let's go, Yanks.
Hey, guys. Joe from Long Island. You're asking in a tweet if I'm mad at Green, Boone, or Altuve. The answer is all fucking three. Number one, fuck that little piece of shit. I don't give a fuck if it's birthday. Fuck Altuve. Fuck Green, because I feel like if he's not lights out, all he does is just give up big home runs. Then fuck Boone for leaving in a fucking dude that can only throw fastballs effectively against one of the best fastball hitters in the game. What are you fucking doing? You got that first fucking out. Why? Why are you leaving him in there when you could throw in fucking Lookie while he does is throw junk balls that produce double plays? I just don't get it. Fuck the Astros!
I think the last time I called was to ask why Jason Tripp was still employed. That's a long time ago. We're in Jason Tripp territory. Everybody sucks. This is ridiculous. When we had, like, a 5-game winning streak against crappy teams, and now against another crappy team, we're playing like shit. This is ridiculous. It was nice while that short winning streak lasted, but I think we're back to where we started from. They suck.
All right, this is my second win of the day, but I need to say that if we could imagine a world wherein this New York Yankees could make it to the World Series with the team that we have, you know, it's not about the team that we have. It's about the way that this team is played. If we could imagine a world where this team played the Nationals in the World Series and we saw something along the lines of what happened tonight, we wouldn't stand a chance. Wouldn't stand a chance.
Go, Gleyber! Yeah! The walk-off! Holy shit! Oh! Let's go, Yankees! Let's go!
What's up, Pinstripers? This is Eric from Syracuse, and I apologize for any bad things I may have said on this voicemail in the past 2 years about Stan. That guy's just lighting up right now. Glad to take another 2 out of 3. Can't complain about that. Just like that song goes, 2 out of 3 ain't bad.
Woo! Fuck you, Andrew Scott, and the rest of the Boonie haters. Fuck all of you Stanton haters from the last 3 years. Fuck all of you Hicks haters. Fuck all of you Chapman haters. Fuck all of you Gary haters. Scratch that. Fuck Gary. Larry Rothschild rules. Woo!
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.